This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
All right, hour number two underway, game day. Running out of the game days here. Nine games left on the schedule. We'll have a four-pack of tickets for the last home game. Up for grabs before 2 o'clock. Carolina Hurricanes will be in town that night. Get your tickets at Ticketmaster.ca. We're into a code word hour, ladies and gentlemen. At some point before noon, listen for your cue. I'll give you a code word. You go into a draw for an Artem Zub Sens Adidas Pro jersey. It's Zub Week, final week of our contest. So six times daily, twice each show. Code words, hit our website, TSN1200.ca. Plug them in and listen tomorrow morning and see if you are a winner. Chris Stevenson sitting in today. Kenny Walls producing, taking you through it here from Canadian Tire Center and in our Section 113 Club Bell adjacent location. This is where the pregame show will be as well. And Gary Bettman is in town and will join us at 5 o'clock this afternoon to kick it off, followed by Darren Dreger, followed by Jamie Baker, followed by Dean Brown, followed by Dean and Gord. There you go. There's your pregame show, Coles Notes version. And let's face it, we're kind of underway with a pregame show, talking about the game tonight and the visit of the commissioner and the pending sale of the team. But we do have significant news elsewhere breaking within the last little while. I don't think we're shocked by this, anybody? When the Baltimore Ravens use the non-exclusive franchise tag on Lamar Jackson, and we know how acrimonious the negotiations have been going on well over a year now between the Ravens and their star quarterback, former league MVP quarterback. And now Lamar Jackson took to his Twitter account this morning, quote, "I love the game of football and my dream to help a team win the Super Bowl." He added that Raven fans are great, but I had to make a business decision that was best for my family and I. No matter how far I go or where my career takes me, I'll continue to be close to my fans of Baltimore, Flock Nation, and the entire state of Maryland. You'll see me again. So Lamar Jackson has requested a trade, officially, from the Baltimore Ravens. Now, the way it works right now, he's talking to other teams. He's free to talk to other teams because it's a non-exclusive franchise tag. And if he comes to terms with another team, then the Ravens have the right to match that offer, and he has to accept being a Raven. Or they can decline it, and the Ravens would get two first-round picks. Now, he is officially asked for a trade. He does not want to be a Baltimore Raven any longer. He's made that crystal clear.
Correct.
So I'm not shocked by this, CJ, but the timing's interesting. You know, why now would you come out with this pronouncement for everybody to hear that you don't want to be a Raven anymore? You're trying to put some pressure on the situation to get this process moving along here.
Which raises the question, he put out a couple of tweets there. So what is his value in a trade? Is it more than two first-round picks? Does it not just feel like the logical way for this to play out is for him to get an offer from another team, the Ravens to decide not to match, and as you said, get two first-round picks? Doesn't that seem to be a situation that makes everybody happy? Do you get more for Lamar Jackson than two first-round picks?
I think you might.
Yeah.
What is he, 26 years old? He's been an MVP in the league already.
Yeah.
At 26 as a quarterback, your best years are usually still ahead of you if you're already at his level.
Mm-hmm.
And I know with Lamar Jackson, just because he is such a dynamic runner, people fear that could he be like an RG3? Does he put himself in harm's way with how mobile he is? The more mobile you are, the more opportunity you have to get hit in the open field. And you can suffer injuries. I get that.
And not a big guy like
he's not
Josh Allen is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even, you know, I don't care how big you are. If you take a lot of licks.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Eric Lindros was not invincible.
Yep. Yep.
Right? His career was derailed and then ended prematurely. But the star part of his career was greatly affected from the hits he took. and he was the biggest, baddest guy going.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I understand that part of it, but do you I think you could possibly get more than two first-round picks for somebody of that pedigree that's already done what he's done at his age. But you raise an interesting point. Maybe by saying this publicly, he's getting it out there to put a little bit of pressure on the Ravens. Like the draft, well, the draft's not that far away, right?
Right.
I think ideally you'd want to have this thing buttoned up about where he's going to play, what the asset mix is going to be coming back, whether we're just taking two picks for him signing, whether we're negotiating a trade.
Well, and
you probably want to get that done ahead of round one of the draft.
Everybody, I think everybody involved wants to move on. Jackson wants to get to his new team and play. Whatever team wants to acquire him wants to have him in place and have him up and running for next year, no pun intended. And the Ravens would like to know how the whole situation is going to be resolved. So, yes, best case scenario is it does get all resolved in short order. But, you know, I think him going public with this, too, helps put pressure on things to be pushed along, because now if there's a team, what do you think about this? And I'm just riffing off the top of my head here. If there's a team out there that's really interested in him and wants to sign him, has not the bottom floor of the trade value been established now? If the Ravens are going to be able to get two first-round picks, if they decide not to match whatever offer he gets, is that not kind of like the floor? Maybe another team will step up now and say, well, we would really like to have him. Maybe we'll offer a little bit more than two first-round picks, to your point, being that maybe that really is his value. So maybe this shakes the trees around the league a little bit, and you wait and see what falls out.
All right, thoughts on any of that? Send them in. One has already come in. Here comes Dan Snyder with a $250 million guaranteed, and then he sells the Commanders. Mic drop, Hugo. Wow, that'd be something. Another piece of news, back to hockey. The changes continue in Philadelphia. This is a big one.
Yes.
This is probably the biggest change with direction with the entire organization since the passing of Ed Snyder. Dave Scott, who's been the chair, basically the top of the food chain since the passing of Ed Snyder. He's been there 30 years, CJ, and he's retiring.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, they've already let go of Chuck Fletcher and Danny Briere as the interim GM. Now this change comes here. What more changes could still be coming here? Is this going to be a total sea change for the Philadelphia Flyers in the coming months here? This is a big one. Because I think there's been questions about the Flyers. Is it time for the Flyers to do what the Oilers did a number of years ago and go outside their flock for leadership? Right?
Yes.
They brought in, you know, Bob Nicholson and, you know, Peter Chiarelli was from the outside when that started as well. But for years, and it's great to be loyal to your own and give opportunities, but the Oilers did that for years and years and years and years. And the Flyers have always done that.
Yes. And it was to, you know, keep those remaining ties to the Stanley Cup teams, right? Bob Clark, senior advisor forever there in Philadelphia. And maybe you do need to go through and open up the doors and let a little bit of fresh air blow through there in terms of the direction of your franchise, because that they've been in the worst position possible for years now. Okay? Just on that you like to call it the meaty middle, where you're not a contender, you're not crappy enough to really be in the lottery and get top picks. When they were in that position, they didn't do a very good job. But they've always kind of just been a mediocre team, right? And you got to move on. So now Dave Scott sits down after 30 years, and Dan Hilferty, he was recently named the CEO, is going to succeed Scott as chairman of the company on April 17th. So and he'll become the governor of the team on July 1st, which is the start of the new hockey year. Yeah, so more more critical changes in Philadelphia. We'll see if this does result in a fundamental change in the philosophy in terms of the reliance on many of the alumni there for advice and vision and direction of the franchise.
Yeah, you just made me go back and look, because a couple came to my mind off the top of my head. Whenever the Philadelphia Flyers have had a premium high pick,
yep,
and sometimes it's not fair to just say, oh, what a big miss, because you got to go back what the hockey world was thinking at the time. It's just,
yes,
sometimes it's just,
yep,
it is what it is,
yep,
right? It's you get a little bit,
well,
unlucky.
Look, the draft when the Senators got Stützle, everybody thought Lafreniere was the number one pick, and then it was kind of like, well, Byfield, Stützle. I mean, luckily for the Senators, they weren't faced with having to make that crucial decision. Mm-hmm. Stützle kind of fell to them. The decision was kind of made for them.
And at this stage of the process, it looks like the Sens got 1-2, really, and
yes,
they should have went 1-2.
And can you?
And they got him at 3-5.
Right, but to your point, I mean, when the prevailing, I even go back to the 93 draft. Who wouldn't have taken Alexander Daigh? They had all kinds of trade offers for Daigh at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, there was talk that Quebec Nordiques were offering up the likes of a treasure trove of
yep,
stars at the time. So, yes, there is that prevailing thought going into a draft that this guy's the consensus number one. And it feels like it really takes some cojones to be able to go against the prevailing wisdom at the time and go off the chart and make a different choice. And that's the way it felt. And I'm sure you're going to give a couple of examples of that now with what the Flyers faced.
Now, and this goes back, and the first one I thought of, and this is part of the unlucky part, they were the worst team. They had the top pick. Then Chicago jumped four spots to go to number one in 2007. And so the Flyers had to pick two and not one. And they got Patrick Kane to the Hawks, and
yep,
they got JVR.
Yep.
Right? So that's unfortunate. Just scrolling. I'm just going to go to high. Like, okay, number eight, Sean Couturier in 2011. Good pick.
Yeah.
Right? Certainly
yep,
worked out there.
Yep.
No question about it. Nothing wrong with that. Samuel Morin, man, the injuries, eh? It just never really got off the ground. He was 11th overall in 2013. That's tough. Ivan Provorov at 7th overall in 2015. Good player.
Yeah.
Good pick. And then the one that you're thinking of, we're all thinking of, and this is not fair because at the time it was like, is it Hischier or is it Patrick? Is it Patrick or is it Hischier?
Yeah.
Then it turned out it was the three guys right after them. It's like, wow. And Hischier is the captain of the Devils and an excellent, excellent player. That's not a miss at one. But unfortunately at two, the only miss in the top five is at two.
Yeah.
But that's to sit there and point fingers, and that is revisionist history. Nobody was thinking that, you know, Pettersson and Heiskanen and Makar,
yeah,
those are the three guys,
yeah,
taken after. Anyways, Cam York at 14 in 2019. When you look at what was, we'll see on that, right? Joel Farabee at 14 in 2018. Anyways, it's just they've had a few. You can't call them complete misses. Some of these guys are players, but now that they're going to have a new GM for now, and it could be another new GM if Danny Breer doesn't keep the job. Maybe they go in another direction. Now there's a big change of top here. Like that could be a seismic change about,
yep,
philosophy,
yep,
what,
yep,
we do and how we're building things.
Yeah. And, you know, do they bring in a, I don't even know what their hierarchy and their hockey, do they bring in a, I don't even know what their hierarchy looks like in their hockey side right now. Do they bring in a director of hot president of hockey operations, add another
layer,
as so many teams have. Interesting times in Philadelphia, but for, you know, a demanding fan base, it feels like these are the kind of, you know, these are the kind of questions that need to be asked by those fans.
All right, with that, we'll take a break. You can hear the Zamboni in the background. The Florida Panthers water bottles and towels are across the visitors' bench about to start their morning skate. That's the game tonight. It's the Sens and Panthers 5 o'clock pregame show. Gary Bettman will join us off the top as he's got a busy day here visiting in the nation's capital. We've got the drop of the puck at 7. Huge game for both teams. And for the Panthers, their playoff hopes are still, well, they're more realistic, let's put it that way, than where Ottawa sits right now. They're still on the outside looking in, the Panthers are. They're 3 back of the Penguins. Panthers have 79 points. Penguins have 82 points. Both have 9 games left in their schedule. Panthers are 4 back of the Islanders for the first wildcard spot. And they've got a game in hand on the Islanders still. And the Islanders are in action tonight. They're at home against the New Jersey Devils. The other game, there's 3 games basically that impact the race in the East for the playoff spots. Buffalo still clinging to hope like Ottawa is. Buffalo has taken on the Habs tonight, and the Sabres have 76 points, and they got 10 games left, and they're a point up on Ottawa, still with a game in hand on the Sens as well. And the thing, Washington, they played 74 games, but they've kind of hung. This is a team that sold at the deadline. They're still, they're on the edges. They're sitting there with 76 points, so just a few twists and turns still to come down the stretch here in the East. We'll take a break. Back in a moment on In the Box on TSN 1200.
This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
Back at it here on a Senators game day. We've got the Sens and Panthers tonight, 5 o'clock pregame show, 7 o'clock faceoff. Commissioner Gary Bettman's in town. He'll join us off the top at 5. Jamie Baker is our analyst tonight. Bakes is busy. Mornings with JR, day job, back here, doing pre-intermissions and post. I'm sorry. It's not CJ 1200
no.
today. You have to pass the torch.
I have done some shifts like that.
It's Baker's
dozen. But the big difference is, yes. Yeah, there you go. I've done some shifts, had days like that, but I didn't do the morning show and then pre and post.
Oh.
I've done my show here and then done pre and post, but I hope he's grabbing a nap, but it doesn't sound likely. He's got his day job, so yeah, hats off to Bakes, who's putting in the what, the 18-hour day?
Oh man,
good for
him. I remember when I was and whenever you're young in any business, the answer is always yes,
yes,
yes, right?
Yep.
Kenny knows this.
I
you
can
know
do that.
This. I know
can do
this.
That.
I can do that. I can do that.
I'll figure it all out later.
I think my most busy run, and you know, when you're young, I'd like no family, no kids, it's all about me anyway, right? So I can just, it's easy to say yes, and if you want to, you know, put yourself in good standing to move up the food chain, and this applies to any business, right? Yes, I can do that is a smart thing to do when you're young.
Yeah,
and I can remember I was working for two different stations at the time, and they allowed me to do that because I wasn't on air at one, I was just a writer at the other. So I did the mornings at the one, midday on-air reporting, afternoons back to the other station, right again, then go back to the other station if there was a game and cover a game, and then get up and do it again at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
I did that for a few months. So that's Bakes Day. Good for you, Bakes. He's going to bring it. He's going to be bright-eyed, bushy-tailed Bakes on the pregame show tonight. Can't wait. All right. Panthers are still waiting for the Zamboni to finish up here. They're anxious. Oh, they're milling about. They want to get ready for their morning skate. We'll get into that in a little bit. A little piece of sound coming from the room, courtesy of our Gord Wilson. He had a conversation with Sens captain Brady Tkachuk.
Brady, is there a chance that maybe you guys can get up for these games, like the same way you got up for the Detroit games a few weeks ago, where you kind of look at the standings and use that as a motivation?
Yeah, it's especially these guys, you know, divisional games. We know we're playing them twice, so it could be a 4-point swing or another crucial 4 points. So, yeah, these are, you know, big games for, you know, both teams and. It should be an exciting one tonight.
How do you stop the Tkachuk there on the other side?
He's been playing great. I've just got to play hard on him. Can't give him much. Got to be, you know, above him. And he's gonna make plays when he has time and space. But for above him, for hard on him, it's just got to make life tough on the whole team.
It's impossible for us like not to bring up the brother thing every time you guys play each other, but has it changed for you competing against him since your first time first year in the league?
Yeah, I think the COVID year when we played each other 9 times, that kind of wore a little bit. But no, that now it's kind of not really. I mean, it's always fun to see them, but you know, it's almost an excuse for our whole family to come and watch and support. But now these are, you know, huge games. It's beyond now just, you know, seeing him and playing him. It's you know, big points for, you know, both our teams. So yeah, it's all business from, you know, from here on out. And yeah, it's just now it's about doing whatever it takes to win.
You save it a bit more when the grandfathers are there too.
Yeah, no, it's no, grandma's back at home too. So it's just for everybody to kind of be around for no week here, and then go to Florida after, so be able to see them there. It's no, special, just always, you know, quality time just with everybody. And yeah, you know, like I said, it's an excuse for kind of everybody to, you know, come hang out and support. And and for Matthew and I, we wouldn't be in the position without, you know, everybody in our family and friends. And yeah, we're always, you know, looking forward and, you know, excited when, you know, everybody's coming to watch us play.
So you still make time to, like, do like dinner last night, or is everyone doing their own thing? Or?
Yeah, everybody's no, we did no dinner last night with you know, the whole family, and then I assume when we go to Florida, we'll do a, you know, a dinner with the, our whole group as well. But comes to today, it's all business, and it's all about doing whatever it takes to win.
For youth ownership talks, just getting really heated, how much do you pay attention to that?
Of course, it's, you know, we're surrounded by it, but no, don't know really much what's going on. So I guess I can be as, you know, interested as everybody else and with what's going on. But yeah, I mean, it's it's exciting for everybody. It's exciting for the whole city, the whole fan base. So whatever happens, it's going to be meant to be. But, you know, for us in the locker room, just our sole focus is just finishing off strong here.
That situation Saturday, Wood came a challenge. Is that a tough situation to put you in? You want to be on the ice, but...
I really don't care with those situations. It's you know, a lot of heat of the moment, a lot of battles. You know, for me, I feel like I just pride myself on playing hard, and I'm not backing down from anybody. So when those situations, you know, arise, it happens, and I'm, you know, confident myself that I'm able to, you know, protect myself and be able to handle, you know, any situation.
So CJ, something we were discussing earlier. Of course, those questions are going to come, but Brady Tkachuk points out that this is different, right? This really matters for both teams at the very same time, divisional opponents here. So when the puck drops, I didn't go that far, but the mentality is that's not my brother, right? As he plays, that he just happens to be on a team we have to beat tonight because it means a lot.
And I think we've seen a little bit of extra fire. I think about him scoring a goal at one point when the family was all up in the box. He scored a goal against the Flames here, and he went over to the glass and kind of gestured up to the box. So I think there has always been a little bit of extra spice, as you would expect, between, you know, two as competitive individuals as they are. So that's always been there. But when you add the team aspect and the situation that each team finds itself in at this point, the Florida being a little bit more in a beneficial position than the Senators are right now, but not by much. So, yeah, a game where both teams are still trying to keep that, as you like to say, the pilot light burning on the playoff hopes. That this is kind of the first time when there's been more at stake in the game, I guess the best way to put it, there's been more at stake in the game for the teams than there has been for the individuals in any kind of,
yes,
family rivalry.
That's the thing, right? And I know, and you and I discussed this earlier in the show, it's fine for us and fans. Like, let's get realistic here. Are the Sens going to make the playoffs? Alfie?
Probably not.
Okay, we know. They probably have to win out, and that still might not be enough. Okay? They can get to 93 points.
Yes.
That's where they can max out at.
That's it.
To me, I think that is the lower end of plausible to maybe get in.
Yep.
And make the playoffs.
So you're looking at even running the table might not be enough.
Exactly. But is this a big game still? Yes, it is to the players, because as a player, you're not done until you're mathematically done. And this is the deepest into any season for anybody that's been a member of the Ottawa Senators during that time. I'm not counting Talbot, who's new to the group. You know what I mean? Nobody's been wearing a Senators sweater that's wearing one right now has been in this late into a season where you're not toast.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's, these games do matter. They still believe, and they should still believe. That's the way it goes. Now, for the Panthers, outside looking in is what we're doing. Yet this is bigger because the Panthers are still legitimately in this. They've got some wiggle room left. But if they lose in regulation tonight, and let's say the Islanders win their game tonight as well, still got a game in it. Like, it's the Panthers are starting to get to the point where they're getting to the dumb and dumber stage here. They've lost three in a row heading into this game. They need this game tonight. They're starting to get into Ottawa territory. That, hey, you're not officially done, but you're getting close to a golf term dormy here.
Yeah.
So this is a big game for both teams for all those reasons. But we know realistically it's a little bit different for the Panthers than it is for the Senators.
Yeah.
But I'm still here for it. It should be a fun game tonight.
Yeah, I mean, and that's that 4-point difference. Ottawa with, you know, 75 points after 73 games and Florida at 79. That 4 points makes all the difference now because Florida still does have a reasonable chance. Three back of Pittsburgh, same number of games played. Four back of the Islanders with a game in hand. That 4 points now just makes such a massive difference. I brought this up with Graham on the pregame show on Saturday night because they were playing the Devils. And the importance of you know, what we talk about all the time here, we have for the last 3 years, the importance of the good start. Do you know that since December 1st, going into Saturday night's game, that the Senators had one more win than the Devils? Since December 1st.
Yep. I know.
They had one more win than the Devils. And they're even now after Saturday night, obviously. But the difference in the two seasons, going back to having a good start, the Devils went 13-1 in November. Ottawa went 4-9-1, and there's the story of two different seasons.
Back-to-back seasons for the Senators, unfortunately. November rain by GNR could be their theme song the last 2 years. The cold November rain.
And you'll remember,
kills your season.
Yeah. And if you'll remember, the Devils did have a fall off. They went 4-7-2 in December. And it looked like, okay.
But it wasn't catastrophic.
No.
Yeah.
Wow. And the Senators went 8-4-2 in December, but that was just too much to overcome. And then, of course, the Devils bounced back January 9-2-2, February 7-2-1. But they had built up enough of a cushion for themselves in November that they didn't have to feel that sense of panic or urgency that Ottawa has felt when the calendar turned December 1st for the last 3 years.
And unfortunately this season, CJ, it was even more important to not bury yourself early because I wasn't looking this far out ahead and really sinking my teeth into it. I don't know if you were, but if we had looked at the schedule at the end of the season for the Sens and you knew where the teams, the good teams would be, it's like this has been, that 5-game winning streak was awesome. And then they head out west, and they lay an egg in Chicago to start it.
Yeah.
And that was the end of a very busy run of games. But they lose 5-0, I know, in Chicago.
They played the Devils the other night. The Devils were on a back.
Exactly. It evens out. I
don't want to hear about, it was a tough road trip. They had to play 3 games in 4 nights. It evens out, folks.
Anyways,
teams coming in. The last time against the Leafs and everybody else who came in had played the night before. Colorado had played the night before.
Yep. I know. I'm just laying this out because they had won 5 in a row. And during that 5-game winning streak is when they traded for Chychrun. And the deadline came and went. And they were right there. So on March 5th, just before the Chicago game, they're on a 5-game winning streak. And they're about to start the 5-game trip. The Sens were ninth in the East, three back of the Penguins and even in games played, and four back of the Islanders with three in hand.
Yeah, there you go.
Since then, starting with the Chicago game, the Sens have gone 3-7-1. They're 12th in the East, seven back of Pittsburgh, eight back of the Islanders, and a game in hand on the Islanders. Over the last 11 games, and this is, I'm preaching to the choir, average goals against per game, 4.09.
Yep.
Allowed five or more in seven of those 11 games. Four in another game.
And it
goals
and it,
for, 2.81 in the last 11. Scored two or less five times.
Yeah.
Including the 5-0 shutout to Chicago.
And the feeling was that, you know, scoring goals wasn't going to be the issue for this team. Stopping them would be, as it has been during the time that DJ Smith has been the coach of this team. But to your point, looking back on those games that you just highlighted, how many of those games would you have said, oh boy, the goaltending cost them tonight? There weren't many. There weren't many. The goaltending wasn't awful. It was okay.
You could say, need him another save. Yeah, that's fair. But it's not like...
It was okay. It wasn't like, oh, geez, here we go again.
Worst goal I've seen in a while, unfortunately, is a game-winning goal on Saturday night. Let him by a Sens goaltender.
Dylan Ferguson, that was a tough one. That was a bad one.
So...
But it didn't help that there was four Senators all on one side of the ice within a stick length of the boards right before the pass is made to Hamilton. Come on.
If people haven't seen CJ's tweet and his screen grab of that, it's not pretty.
No.
It's not pretty. That's a bad goal on the goalie, but
that was a bad team precursor. Yeah, there was a lot going on. Yep.
Yeah, as well.
Batherson caught in no man's land. And again, this isn't to rip on players. So I don't know what DeBrincat's doing. DeBrincat goes down low on the boards on the side where the puck is. Maybe he thinks it's going to get pushed ahead and he can cut it off. But Batherson gets back, and that's the thing. The effort's there. They're both back, and they're both deep into the zone ahead of Devils players. But it's just and the fact that it is DeBrincat and it is Batherson who are combined whatever Lee likes to bring it up, minus 60. It's not effort. It's not a matter of effort. They're back. They're making the effort to get back. It's just once they get inside their blue line, they don't have a clue about where they should be, where the threat's coming from, and how to make it hard for the other team to score a goal. And that's what I keep going back to. Just make it hard for the other team. Make them earn their chances. Make them earn their goals. And that was a complete cluster. On Saturday night with all three forwards. Hamonic didn't look good on that one either, chasing the puck carrier at the blue line. He winds up outside of the zone. He's outside of the blue line as the puck's going the other way. And all three forwards lined up along the boards, leaving the whole middle of the ice open. Do you want to save from Ferguson there? Of course you do. But it was pretty hard to escape that the entire middle of the ice was undefended with the game on the line. And again, this coming back to kind of summing up what the Senators have been about. They're down in the game, and they find a way to fight back and get back in the game and tie it. Chabot and Kaslyk score. You go into the third. Tied on the road. Your playoffs hopes on the line. Then just a bunch of brain farts like that to give up a bad goal that sends you down to defeat. And that really is the game when we look back on this. We're going to be, man, that was the one that kind of sunk them. Just it's sad and frustrating that it has to end on a goal like that.
And you could... The players really felt it as well. You could hear, and the players that were made available yesterday, they had an optional practice yesterday.
Yep.
People didn't hear some of the sound coming from the players. They said, no, that they were talking about it on the plane, They were really, it felt like they're mathematically still there, but I got the sense, the way they were describing how angry they were with themselves,
yep,
that they, at least a part of them thought, that might have been it.
Yeah.
That really needed that at least point, and you need two, let's be honest. But we'll see what happens tonight. They got the Panthers. Panthers are on the ice. I'll say this. Not much ado about nothing. Can mean nothing. I'm just observing as you were
ranting.
That wasn't a full rant.
No.
It was a mini rant. Bob wasn't stopping anything. The drills that they were running. I don't know if he cared, though.
Yeah.
He wasn't putting much effort
yeah.
in. But we'll see. We'll see on that. Okay, back in a moment. The box continues.
I got a thought when we come back.
This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
All right, some thoughts coming in from train of thought in the last segment. CJ had a stream of consciousness, which he is apt to do, which we like. We like that. He pulls out his leather-bound notebook. Finds this, yes. And that's his jumping off point. And we let the big dog eat. So some thoughts have come in, CJ. Big Red Brandon. Can't some of the blame of 12 and 19 defensive play be on DJ? What's the system? It's a circus in the D zone. Ryan writes, morning, boys. Huge power play goal from Saturday. Did anyone else feel there was big-time interference on Gambrell
yes.
at the blue line?
Yep.
Ha-ha, sorry, it's bugging me. You're right, Ryan.
Yep.
Sometimes you call that, sometimes you don't, and
yep.
they didn't. That easily could have been a call.
No, we mentioned that on yep. a couple of occasions on the in the intermission for sure, the next intermission. But I thought there definitely was a pick at the blue line that opened the lane for Hughes to go coast-to-coast there.
That's a play that every team in the league does, though. It's just a matter of how subtle.
Yep.
You do it, and you oftentimes it's subtle enough you get away from with it.
Yeah,
that one.
That was a bad one.
It wasn't subtle enough.
I think he lost his stick on
yeah.
the play too.
Yeah, yeah. You're right, Ryan.
I agree.
It should be bugging you a little bit because that easily could have been a call. It could have been, to be fair.
Yep.
Jeremy writes, "Hey guys, Jamal Mares kept saying, and Mares did the color on the TV side, right? If Ottawa doesn't over back check, they should be fine. He mentioned it several times. Do you guys feel that?" He sees as coaching tactics issue that our staff doesn't see. Thanks, Jeremy. I guess Mares was saying they are over back checking. I guess.
They get back, and I could see that on that winning goal that I've been talking about because DeBrincat was deep in the zone, not anywhere near a devil. He was deep in the zone, down along the wall. Kind of around the face-off dot. Like I said, maybe he was anticipating the puck being moved forward down the wall into the Senator zone from the blue line, and he was hoping to pick it off there. But can you call that over back-checking? I guess so. Like I said, the effort is there. And that's been one of, kind of DJ's themes quite often, right, in his post games. I was happy with the effort. And on many nights, as I said.
And he's not wrong.
He's not wrong. And there's been a lot of nights.
Here's the but.
Where they've been down in games. And they have come back. To make a game of it. To wit. Goals by period going into that game against the Devils. Ottawa was minus 10 in the first, minus 10 in the second, and plus 13 in the third periods of games that they've played this year, going into that Devils game. So they have had strong third periods, and there's been a bunch of times where they were kind of down, and they rallied to get back into a game. So I agree with the coach that the effort's there, but unfortunately, effort is not enough. Hard work is not enough in this league. You have to assume that the other team is going to match your work ethic. So,
you know, the hardest working Ottawa senator I've ever, maybe the hardest working senator I've ever seen. His nickname was Chainsaw because he worked so hard. Darcy Lowen.
Yeah.
And that's an extreme example to your point.
Yeah.
Working hard, that's the given, especially in the best league in the world. Of course, if you can't work hard, see you later. And if you're a coach that can't get your players to work hard, you shouldn't even be given a chance to be at this level.
Yeah. So they work
hard. So what else do you do here to make your team better?
And that goal, again, is a great example that both Batherson and DeBrincat are back. They're back in numbers. But it's wasted if you don't know what to do or where to go or identify the threat once you do get back there. And that was the issue for me on that goal. Pinto's on his man. Batherson's kind of in no man's land. He doesn't have anybody. He hasn't shut down a passing lane. He's not a speed bump. He's not a pylon. He's not he's in a place where he's not really doing anything. And DeBrincat, same thing. He's down low along the wall where there's no devils there, and he's certainly not making it difficult to make a pass across the ice, which is what ended up happening with the pass to Hamilton down low and him getting the opportunity to score the winning goal. So work is not the issue. So if that's the case, then the question becomes, how much do you want to divide the responsibility for coaching and the players not understanding, or how much of it is coaching, how much of it is the players? And I don't know exactly how I'm going to divide that pie.
Here's
up.
What I do know, and we, unfortunately, social media, it seems like it's a world of absolutes, and it's not.
It's not.
It's not one thing.
Yeah.
It's not. It's fair to say, listen, you got to take it upon yourself. There's some basic things about awareness. If you play hockey, that you should know, right? And that's not on the coach when those mistakes are made sometimes, right? Like, that's, come on. But when things continue to happen over and over again, it's fair to question, okay, what's going on here?
Yeah.
How come this is happening so much?
And we always love, you just mentioned, you love things in absolutes. And I always like simplistic things. So whenever I had the opportunity to talk to really, really good coaches over the years, I would always ask a question like, so what's your number one thing when it comes to playing defense? A very general question like that. There's different answers, but they all kind of come back to the same thing. Protect the middle of the ice. If you protect the middle of the ice, you're going to make the other team have to make a pretty good play to try and score. Because they're not going to score from out by the dots most of the time. Protect the middle of the ice. That means always having a guy defending the front in the slot, which the Senators don't do. Having guys coming back that are going to block those passing lanes so that somebody's got to do something special to create a scoring chance. And that protecting the middle of the ice thing does not seem to be a fundamental. We see two defensemen in the same corner often with this team and nobody in front.
We've got to go to break. My question to you, CJ, because I'm a simple man like you. I like simple thoughts like that. That's good. What's the most important swing thought for me? I like my golf analogies. There's your swing thought for defense in hockey. What's the best? Give me one swing. What's the most important thing about my swing? One thing.
Well, when it comes to your golf game, mine would be make sure your credit card's already out of your pocket and tucked just on the edge of your golf bag so that when the beverage cart goes by, it's handy.
All right, we'll go.
Keep it simple.
Mid-show, back in a moment. Second half, straight ahead. Another code word. We got Sens Carolina tickets up for grabs before 2 o'clock. It's a game day. Panthers still wrapping up their morning skate. Sens and Panthers at 7. Pre-game's at 5. I'll take you through it with Jamie Baker, with Darren Dreger, and right off the top, in-person visit from the commissioner, Gary Bettman. All still to come today on TSN 1200.